Okay, this is going to be a new thing that we're going to do once a week. I've got Brad Schoenfeld, my partner in crime, on the call, and we had an idea to do some quick 30-minute recordings every week, which is really tough for me because I like to ramble. But we want to do quick 30-minute discussions every week that you can listen to, and we'll just talk about whatever. But it'll be related to sports science in some fashion. Sports science, strength training, hypertrophy, bodybuilding, biomechanics, whatever we feel like talking about. So, again, with me is Brad Schoenfeld. Brad, you want to say hi?
How's it going, guys?
Brad, I consider Brad to be the one of the world's experts in hypertrophy. Certainly, if there's someone who knows more. They probably don't know the practical end of the practical side of things as well as the scientific aspects, the physiological aspects to hypertrophy. So for this call, the things we wanted to talk about are basically how Brad and I came to become such good friends, and then also his first paper. Basically, God, what was it, Brad? 2010?
2010, yeah.
It was 2010. Do you remember the month that
October, yep.
it was October of 2010. And I still remember I was in my house in Scottsdale at the time. This was before I moved out to Auckland. I read this paper and it was a review on hypertrophy. And I had always wanted. I was always curious about this. I always wanted this a paper to be written that summarized the research on hypertrophy. And I was so excited reading this paper. I can't even begin to tell you. I was giddy. And so I read it, and right after I finished reading it, I emailed Brad and I said, "Can I interview you for T-Nation?" So I interviewed Brad, and what was interesting, he got right back to me. And I sent him some questions, and then about probably, I don't know, 2 hours later, he sends me the interview. And I was just blown away because I've interviewed a lot of people in the industry, and a lot of people have interviewed me. It's standard to take a week, 2 weeks to get back to people. And Brad fired these things back in 2 hours, and that's where I really knew he was special, because he knows this stuff so well. He doesn't have to go, check references and things like that. He just fired off these answers, and it was very scientific. And the article was published on T-Nation. So first, let me tell you the articles in case any of my readers have access to these. They can pull it up. The journal article I'm talking about was published in the JSCR, the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research. The title was. What was the title, Brad? Mechanisms of Muscle Hypertrophy and Their Application
Resistance training.
to Resistance Training. Do you know that was published in October of?
October of 2010, correct.
Yep. And then, what was it? A couple months later, where we published an interview on T-Nation.
I don't even think it was that. I think it was probably in November. Again, my memory is a little hazy as far as that goes, but it was within about a month or so, as I remember. I mean, we clicked immediately. It was very very cool the way we just had so much in common, and basically out of my paper, it was kind of fate that we ended up meeting up, and ever since then we've been speaking probably a couple times a week every week since, if not
Well,
more.
I just pulled it up. It was October 27th, 2010, and it was the interview is called "The Hypertrophy Specialist." So this was 3 years ago, and since then we've written a number of papers together on in T-Nation, for the NSCA Personal Trainer Journal, for the NSCA Strength and Conditioning Journal, and for the NSCA Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research. And we'll be talking about different things as time goes on, but today we want to talk specifically about Brad's hypertrophy review paper from 2010, because what's nice is that Brad and my research go hand in hand. I'm focused more on the biomechanics side. he focuses more on the physiological side, but they meld, and that's, and we feed off of each other. So, so we've got 24 minutes left. We're 6 minutes in, and we will spend the remainder talking about this first paper. Now, I also want to say, I will link this on my, his paper on my blog. Someone, if it's still up, Brad, someone linked it on a forum or something.
Yeah, and, wonderful world of the internet, you know.
someone leaked it on a forum, so the PDF is out there.
It's copyright on the internet at this point.
Yeah, so you're not supposed to be able to get access to it, but
the way I look at it, Brett, the more people, you know, it's obviously this is not a book or something that I wrote. So when it comes to research, the more people that have access to it, now, obviously the JSCR is not going to like that, but I think that the dissemination of scientific knowledge is very important. And you know what? The hell with the copyright. So
hey, what they don't know won't hurt them.
Right.
But I agree. This is it's the better educated people are. You know, it's better for sports science all around. And I'm amazed at how many strength coaches and how many biomechanics types, they have good knowledge of exercise form, good knowledge of sports specific training or how to get athletes strong and athletic, but they don't know about hypertrophy training. They don't know about bodybuilding. And that's silly because every personal trainer I know, and even a lot of strength coaches that I know do some personal training on the side. And Brad, what would you say? The typical client comes to you and says, you know, I want to train with you. And you ask them what their goals are. How many of them say, I want to increase
my strength? Yeah, no, they come in, they say, look, I want to gain muscle and I want to lose fat.
I want to look better. I'd say 80% of them, their primary goal is to look better.
Yeah.
And they don't go in and say, I want you to clean up my movement patterns, fix my dysfunction. I want to increase my one rep max squat, bench press, and deadlift. I want to improve my vertical jump and 40-meter sprint. They don't say things like that. They want to look better. Now,
hold on, Brett. Here's the thing, too, that I think one thing that has to be pointed out is that there is a direct relationship between muscle hypertrophy, between cross-sectional area and strength. So basically at the beginning, you can do a lot of neural stuff, but as athletes become better over time, it's also not only about their neural patterns, increasing their muscle cross-sectional area will make them stronger. So if you don't know how to maximize that, you're going to be missing out on the strength component as well.
And we've written we wrote a really good article on that for T-Nation called Why Bodybuilders Are More Jacked Than Powerlifters. Yep. There are reasons why, you know, bodybuilders should not train just like powerlifters. Powerlifters should not train just like bodybuilders. Athletes should not train just like bodybuilders. But a good strength coach knows, like, think of Mel Siff. It's all sports science. You should know as much as you can about all the different areas, and that way you can help. You know, there are times when athletes need to focus on hypertrophy. There are times of the year when you might want to have a phase focusing on muscle growth. You know, the more you know about building strength, building muscle, building power, movement patterns, all these things, physical therapy topics, the more you know, the better it is. And I can't tell you how many times I utilize, you know, skills from different disciplines when I'm training someone. So, and so as Brad mentioned, when people come to you, their goals are typically physique related. But you can clean up their movement. You can get their form better. You can get them stronger. You can get them all. But you need to be making them look better, and then they get hooked, and then often their goals then kind of morph, and they start liking the strength gains. They start liking the fact that they can do chin-ups on their own and push-ups on their own, and they start liking their deadlift strength and things like that, and then they become hooked. So by when they start getting compliments on their physique, when they start, you know, developing impressive levels of strength, that's when they become hooked. And that's so critical that you get them to that point, because then you have turned like a formerly sedentary person into a person who's hooked on exercising, who's going to take care of their health for the rest of their life. Do you agree, Brad?
Oh, absolutely. And look, it's also about no matter who you're training, if you're training an athlete, now obviously there's certain limitations for various athletes where you wouldn't want them getting big beyond a certain point because it can potentially have certain limitations towards endurance. Again, depending on the sport, perhaps like basketball or something, but for virtually any sport I can think of, getting someone bigger will have optimal or will help to optimize their strength for that particular sport as well. So, you know, there, again, it really, I think a lot of times you get this bodybuilder image that people have a misperception. They think of these juiced bodybuilders and, hey, why would I ever want to do that? And that's completely contrary to what this is about.
Well, that's not to say that if you're training an athlete, you should start doing, you know,
building training,
blood flow restriction training with them.
But just that, well, but it is saying that integrating certain hypertrophy principles within a periodized, or I know we can have that debate another time on periodization, but within some type of structured routine, that integrating hypertrophy type principles generally is I would say in most cases is a beneficial aspect for almost any client. I can think of maybe a pool player wouldn't have much,
you know, like
bowler, but
yeah, like a dart thrower, of course, maybe even a jockey. But the point is most athletes that people train are like ground sport athletes or something. And even sprinters, you look at Usain Bolt over the last 10 years, you see video clips of him sprinting 10 years ago. He's still thin, but he's a lot more muscular than he was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's just a natural progression. Now, you will develop muscle from training like a power lifter, from doing low reps, but even the power lifters employ some bodybuilding type hypertrophy training with their assistance lifts. So
yeah, there was a study, as you know, in JSCR not too long ago, and they about strongman competitors, and they looked. I think it was powerlifters in there too. Anyway,
no, that was a different. They there have been two different.
Right, you get them confused people. After a while, but all of them admitted to using the hypertrophy type of training methods within their power, within either the powerlifting or their strongman lifting to.
Yep.
Maximize results.
Okay, so we're almost halfway in. We're about 14 minutes in. We've got 16 minutes. First thing that I want to discuss real quick before we delve into your paper, briefly describe what you're going to be looking at with your PhD topic, Brad.
Yeah, it's really going to be an interesting study. I'm looking at different low. I don't want to get too much into the specifics, but just in a general context, I'm looking at different loading ranges, repetition loading ranges on a volume equated basis in well-trained lifters. And we're going to look at both their strength and their hypertrophy outcomes after. And it's an 8-week study. So I'm a couple weeks in. I should have some good data within several weeks.
So basically, what's better for muscle hypertrophy? Heavy weight for low reps or moderate weight for medium reps?
Correct.
And the volume is equated.
That is correct.
Yep. So surprisingly, there's not a lot of research on that, especially with advanced lifters. So
there's actually none. There's not been what there's been a couple of studies in untrained subjects that have investigated it, but there has never been a study in trained subjects, well-trained. And the average training experience in my subjects is around 4 years. So these are
actually, I pulled up a study in the Mongolian Journal of Strength and Conditioning, Brad. Just kidding.
That was with lions, wasn't it? I think they were looking at,
So anyway, now we're going to delve into Brad's article, because this will form a basis of what we're going to refer to this a lot in future episodes. So in Brad's first article, he summarized the the mechanisms of muscle hypertrophy, he kind of categorized them into three categories. And I've joked around to Brad that I'm going to trademark M cubed, the three M's. But anyways, he summarized the research and kind of, it's a nifty little model, because you think of all the ways that a muscle can grow and they fit into one of these categories for the most part. And these categories, Brad, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, the three categories, and I outline these in the article that Brett had mentioned, the review paper, are mechanical tension, which is the forces that are exerted on a muscle during a lift. And of course, the heavier the load, the greater the mechanical tension. Metabolic stress, which is the buildup of metabolites that are generated during lifting, is the second one. And the third one is damage to the muscle, muscle damage. And my working theory is that, and this again is hypothetical and needs to be tested, and it's one of the things I am testing in my dissertation work, well, but that there is a sweet spot, if you will, for the three, where if you can optimize their all three together, you will get an optimal hypertrophic response. That needs to be tested. And one of my working theories is that there probably are different, that there is no one universal sweet spot for everyone, but that various genetic factors will also mitigate whether that the differences, that there might be different sweet spots for different people to some degree. I think they'll probably be within a fairly a given range, but you're not going to probably have one rep on one side or 30 reps on another, but somewhere within a loading range pattern that we might be able to come up with, the majority of people, if you did a standard deviation, you'd get the majority of people within a fairly narrow range, I would think.
So some people, let me discuss my thoughts on this. For those who don't understand, because these sound like big words, but when you really break it down, they're fairly easy to understand. Mechanical tension, that is when you're lifting weights and you're, you know, you really feel your muscle contracting hard. But there's different types of tension. If you do think of a Romanian deadlift, where you're kind of keeping a good arch, sitting back, you will stretch the hamstrings. When you stretch a muscle under eccentric load to long lengths, you're going to get a combination of active and passive tension. If you just stretch a muscle, like if I just stretch my pecs as far back as I can, I'm not contracting them, that's passive tension. You're just stretching it. But if you contract a muscle, that's active tension. And lifting weights through a full range of motion has been shown to be better than stretching or just isometric contractions for muscle growth. So you have full range of motion lifting involves a combination of active and passive tension. Brad and I think that that's the most important mechanism for muscle hypertrophy. If you had to choose one, that's the most important. Tension is king.
Well, and let me say that obviously if you don't exert any tension on a muscle, then nothing's going to happen. As a matter of fact, under conditions of unloading or deloading, there is atrophy.
Yep.
So obviously tension is going to be the driving force.
But as we explain in our article on T-Nation, why bodybuilders are more jacked than powerlifters, if tension were the end-all be-all, then powerlifters would be bigger than bodybuilders, and that is far from the case. And now you could say bodybuilders do more, use more steroids or use more drugs, but natural bodybuilders are bigger than natural powerlifters. So again. There's something to this metabolic stress, and some research even speculate that it's more important than tension, but Brad and I don't quite agree with that. But we do believe it's very important, and that if you're trying to maximize muscle growth, you need to get metabolic stress. Metabolic stress is where you have a buildup of metabolites, for example, lactate, where you feel the burn, you're getting a pump. These things fall under metabolic stress. And this is what bodybuilders are always good at, feeling the muscle doing the work, and really, they have a good mind muscle connection. They want to feel the burn. They do higher reps. They do shorter rest periods. And this is why their muscles, this helps explain why their muscles are bigger. And there's a lot of research on blood flow restriction training and KAATSU and things like that. And again, that's the principle that is working there is metabolic stress. And Brad, also hormones fall under, hormonal milieu falls under that category as well, correct?
Well, yeah, metabolic stress is going to have multiple implications, and the acute hormonal response certainly is one of them. Whether we've discussed, and perhaps, I don't know if we'll probably not have time today, but in another episode, it's questionable how much, if any, that does enter into it. And just to give the short course, I am highly confident that if it does, it's not a whole lot, but it still might be kind of meaningful, physiologically, practically meaningful for someone if it does. So that's something.
What Brad's talking about, the hormonal milieu, is like in the old days, we used to always say, make sure you do your squats. It's going to jack your testosterone up. You're going to get huge everywhere. And that's not true. We've now learned that that's largely overrated. You're not going to do squats and your biceps are going to get ginormous, because there's enough studies now where we can say that if that does happen, it's not that much. There's a lot of studies showing that you don't get any increased muscle protein synthesis in other parts of the body. You just get increased hypertrophy in the muscles that are being worked. Even if you jack up your testosterone levels a little bit after the workout, you don't get increased muscle growth everywhere. But the jury is still out. We need some more studies on it.
Avast virus database has been updated.
Sorry, that was my Avast kind of kicked in there.
I was wondering what was going on there. Okay, so that's metabolic stress. And then muscle damage is, you know, where you have DOMS the next day. It's where you feel sore. Now, Brad and I both feel that this is overrated. People in general, they worship soreness. That's what they use as their indicator for whether they got a good workout. And while muscle damage is a component of hypertrophy, too much is bad. You don't want to be crippled, because too much muscle damage impairs, I mean, first of all, it mimics symptoms of being ill. You've got these myokines that are cytokines that's similar to like an infection or something. And you can get rhabdomyolysis if you get too sore. Now, that's rare in bodybuilding, but it can happen. But the other thing is that it decreases. When your muscle is super sore, it decreases muscle force production and torque production, and you can't get as good of a workout. And so you don't want to get too sore to where you impair subsequent workouts. Now, if you're doing a body part split routine, training a muscle once a week, that's one thing. But if you're training with higher frequency and you're hitting your muscles or movement patterns more often, you don't want to be limited by soreness. So, well, everyone likes to know they did a workout and they feel the muscles, the next day or the day after. You don't want to get too sore. So those are the three components to muscular hypertrophy. Mechanical tension is probably the most important, followed by metabolic stress, followed by muscle damage. However, each person, as Brad said earlier, we both think that each person has their genetically determined kind of mixture of those. So some people might respond a little bit better to low reps and more tension, whereas other people might respond a little bit better to medium reps and a little bit more metabolic stress. But these are the three components that influence your muscular hypertrophy. Of course, diet and lifestyle factors factor in there as well. But it's such a critical paper. It's such an important paper because it just summarized all the previous researchers. And understanding these three categories helps you, gives you a conceptual framework for how to write optimal programs and ensure that you're covering all your bases. Brad.
I was going to say, if I could also add, though, and even again, based on the hypothesis of the sweet spot, personally, I still think even if that is the case, hopefully we can at some point quantify this, it still does not mean that you should not in other rep ranges. In fact, to me, there's a good cause to say that even if that is the case, what that would do is to say that your hypertrophy training should be centered on that range, but that should not be exclusively the range you train at.
Yeah, good,
because
good
training point. With higher reps has benefits, as well as training with lower reps. There is a synergism.
Very good point. So to give you an example, we've got about 4 minutes left. When I do glute training, I follow these principles. I like employing lunges and deep squats from time to time because you really stretch the glutes under load, and that's going to give you the muscle damage. It's got a good eccentric loading, and eccentric muscle actions lead to more soreness than concentric. You're really, you know, focusing on that stretch position for the glutes. However, squats and lunges do not make a complete glute training program. I get hip thrusts in there, and we really focus on hip thrusts because those activate the muscles to the glutes to the highest degree possible, which is fairly indicative of mechanical tension, of muscle force. And so the higher the activation, the more force you're generating, the more active force you're generating in the muscles. And that's more true for isometric actions than dynamic actions, but it's still, I've seen a lot of studies, it's pretty indicative of muscle force. It's not perfect, but EMG is not perfect, but nothing in biomechanics is perfect. And then, and I try to get them very strong at different rep ranges in hip thrusts, but then for the metabolic stress, I like doing high rep hip thrusts. I like doing high rep band seated abductions and high rep, like lateral band walks or something where they feel the burn in the glutes. And when I train people, I really pinpoint that. And it's different for every person. Some people get a lot of tension with one exercise and not another. Some people feel the burn with this exercise. So when I train people, I find the exercise that make them the sorest, that give them the most tension, and that give them the most burn and the best pump. And I make sure to include those. But we do get strong in a variety of rep ranges. We hit the muscles from different angles because, you know, most muscles, there are functional subdivisions, and they need to be targeted with multiple exercises. Do you have anything? We've got about 2 minutes left, Brad, and I never stick to a time, so I'm forcing myself to keep this to 30 minutes. So we've got a minute and a half left.
Yeah, I just want to add that you should also link up the article that we did on our all hip whole hip extensions exercise created equal, where Brett, you did a great job on the working at the biomechanics of that with the mathematical issues and just showing how the different exercises have different benefits to the three mechanisms that we just...
Excellent idea. And I think we put that online as well. So we'll link both of these articles. And this way you can see how Brad and my work mesh together and why we love working with each other. So, okay, we've got about 45 seconds left. Again, we're going to be doing this every week, giving you 30-minute snippets. The B&B, what are we calling it, Brad? The B&B connection?
B&B half hour, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, 30, B&B connection sounds good.
The B&B 30-minute special, I don't know. And we got to think of something. But Brad's been kind enough to agree to do this, and I think it'll be good because we can address different topics while not overwhelming you with three-hour podcasts like what I usually do with Jonathan and when I interview other people, when I interview guests. So we are signing off. Thank you very much for listening. Brad, thank you very much.
My pleasure, dude. Look forward to it.
Thank you.